The healing power of story. Laura Sims has seen that firsthand. Laura is a writer, performer, educator, and advocate from New York City. She has received many, many awards for her work, including Sesame Street's Sunny Days Award for her work with children worldwide. She is the mother of Ishmael Bea, former child soldier from Sierra Leone and author of A Long Way Gone. And Laura Sims is on Prince Edward Island today, speaking as part of International Development Week at UPEI later on this afternoon. And she joins us now in the Island Morning Studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome to PEI.
Thank you.
We think of storytelling as a form of entertainment, maybe a way to share history or experience. How does it help with healing?
I think the word is sharing right there. First of all, there are several things. You engage people directly. And when you listen to a story, you imagine you become everything in the story. So your mind becomes softened. And let's say a story has a perpetrator and a victim. You really are both. You're both the problem and you're the solution. And in listening to each other's personal stories, we really gain tremendous sense of compassion for each other. And there's a quality in direct speaking that opens the heart, sort of underneath the place where we're stuck on opinions and assumptions. Our common ground is that place of listening where everyone has stories to tell. So we have to reconnect in this technological world.
How have you seen that firsthand in your work?
Well, I know that you're interested in the work that I do in Haiti.
I am.
And I went originally with International Medical Corps to train Haitian health workers who were going into the camps working with mothers and children and in orphanages. And there people would be sort of really sunk into a kind of despair that when you're there, it was impossible not to really feel viscerally. And listening to a story, you sort of leap out of yourself suddenly. You become refreshed. And I'd watch the children sort of lying down on the tarp, just sort of sitting up, and the mothers who looked like wilted flowers of despair, just coming alive, laughing and talking. That's the immediate healing mm-hmm. in which you can be refreshed or inspired. And when you are, then you can think of alternatives. So it's way more than mere entertainment.
And this is the project Girls Write Haiti that you established. How does that project work?
This led into Girls Write Haiti. I worked also for Mercy Corps there, and I met a woman who led in a small camp on Rue des Frères in Port-au-Prince, which is the capital.
Yeah.
She led an arts camp for 80 kids in impossible rubble, drenched, dust, illness situation. And I met adolescent girls there who were so incredible and in need. So I began to work with them. They wanted to create a group. And so we began Girls Write Haiti as Jeune Ofeda, which is a young organization for action. And every Saturday for the last, going on almost 3 years, I send in a Haitian writer and then a Haitian dance teacher. And now we're adding a leadership component where these girls who have been just completely transformed by expressing themselves, mm-hmm. being able to tell their stories, writing unbelievably great poetry, and dancing, have really warded off the kind of hopelessness and victimization. The girls are the most vulnerable and fragile in Haiti because of the increase of sexual violence in such poverty. But they're remarkable girls. So I raise money for them to do that and to train teachers. There's a young girl now, she's 14, and she wants to become a storyteller. So we're creating another project where these girls can run a camp for the 80 children under 10 years old who are theirs for 4 years, living in totally ruined, devastating situation. But to see young people in that situation wanting to go to school, being able to be so radiantly happy, regardless of their situation, is, I think, a lesson for all of us. That to really communicate, to put our, you know, I love computers and all the rest of it, but mm-hmm. put it down and really listen to each other. We need it in the world. I think it's the root cause of so much violence also is our disconnection from ourselves and the natural world.
Right.
So it's been, I mean, for me, it's an absolute joy.
How did you develop your own gift and your own passion for storytelling?
By a series of mistakes and not exactly knowing what I wanted to do growing up in Brooklyn. But I once literally told a story in Central Park and to a group of people, and I realized at that time in my early 20s that all of the theater experiments I was involved in to break down the fourth wall in this very formal situation, suddenly the way that people listened, there was no fourth wall. And I wanted to know what that was about. So I went on this quest of meeting Margaret Mead and Joseph Campbell and other people and Tibetan Buddhist teachers to find out what is oral tradition, what happened among tribal peoples in telling stories that really not only taught a lesson conceptually, but gave you the lesson and the impetus for compassion.
So it all began there in Central Park.
It
and then
did.
From there to Haiti. And where else have you been able to travel with this and work with people?
Well, I've been in many, many countries in the world, including India. Recently, after the Mumbai bombings, training teachers to use storytelling. I really began a lot of this healing work in a hospital in New York City. And then in Romania, working with gypsy women for a great organization called Ovidio Rom, who wanted to learn to tell stories for their children, but I saw them transform through the activity of, I used the storytelling to generate personal stories that they felt they couldn't tell, give them a way to tell it. I work now on a great project through Rutgers University in Newark, in after-school projects and community projects with nonviolence and narrative, developing a way that teachers can be trained to use communication and storytelling rather than punishment in the schools.
And we mentioned your adopted son, Ishmael, former child soldier from Sierra Leone. How did you two connect?
I was asked to be a facilitator at a UNICEF conference called Children's Voices in 1996, and he was one of two boys from Sierra Leone, West Africa, that I met who had been child soldiers. 57 kids were there. And he was remarkable from the conversations I had with him. And he had been doing rap music, writing these kind of what are called cool lyrics that were against war. And he himself was a great storyteller, growing up in an oral tradition in Africa. And he had things to say that was so profound about the causes of revenge, and actually that we just had to stop, that revenge causes revenge. And I thought, so somebody should save this kid's life. He's an amazing person. And then we kept in contact when he went back. And one thing led to another. Over 2 years, I decided to just do one thing every day toward finding out how to bring him here so he could get a good education. And it's a long story, but at any rate, there was June 6, 1998, when I went to JFK to pick him up. And the rest is a story that most people know.
Yeah. And now you're waiting by the phone?
I'm waiting by the phone because Ishmael's wife is about to give birth.
You'll be a grandparent.
I will.
Laura, I could talk to you forever, and people will get a chance to hear more from you this afternoon. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much. And can I just say something, that if people
Please.
Are interested in the Haiti Girls Project, we're really looking for funding, and people can go to my website, www.laurasims.com.
Thank you so much. Have
Thank
a great stay
you.
On Prince Edward Island.
Thank
that is
you.
Laura Sims, visiting PEI, special guest today at UPEI as part of International Development Week. Her talk is happening at 4:30 in the Alex H. McKinnon Auditorium in McDougal Hall, with reception and book signing to follow. And more information and tickets can be purchased at UPEI's website. It is 23 minutes now past 8 o'clock.